Good afternoon. Happy Halloween. I'm glad we have standing room only today. I'm here today to talk with you about some of the work that we have going on in Cambodia. Thank you for the great introduction, let's just get into it. Unfortunately, I have no financial relationship to disclose, and the findings and conclusions in this presentation are those of the authors and do not necessarily represent the views of the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. So I'm going to start today talking basically an overview of the global burden of traffic injuries. Then I'm going to focus in on Cambodia because that's where this project is based. In Cambodia, the name of the program is specifically called the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative. And there's a school-based component, which will be the focus of today's discussion. So some background on global road safety. In 2007, road traffic crashes were the ninth leading cause of death globally. And if significant action is not taken, by 2030, road traffic crashes will be the fifth leading cause of death globally. Road traffic crashes are on par with the number of deaths of tuberculosis each year and have already surpassed the global burden of malaria deaths each year. And annually, there are 1.3 million deaths from road traffic crashes, and this comes out to approximately 3,500 deaths each day around the world. On May 11th, 2011, the Decade of Action for Road Safety for 2011 to 2020 was launched. It was launched in more than 100 countries with one goal, and that was to prevent 5 million road traffic deaths globally by 2020. This picture is the Global Road Safety Ambassador from Sesame Street, which is Grover. We also have Dr. Frieden, who is the director of CDC, and we have Mr. Strickland, who is the National Highway and Traffic Safety Administration Administrator. And this was at the launch of the Decade of Action for Road Safety in Washington, D.C. in May of 2011. And as a result of the Decade of Action for Road Safety, the CDC, and the National Center for Injury Prevention Control, and the Division of Unintentional Injury Prevention, we've all really have stepped up our game in terms of global efforts. So that's kind of where the global Helmet Vaccine Initiative comes into play. So now let's talk about Cambodia. This is a map of Cambodia, and when I first was assigned this project, I had to go to a map because I didn't know where it was. As you can see, it's close to Vietnam and Thailand. In 2010, 85% of the vehicle fleet in Cambodia were motorcycles. In 5 years, motorcycle-related deaths increased by 61%. And then in 2010, 79% of the motorcyclists killed in Cambodia were unhelmeted at the time of their crash. This is what it looks like when your vehicle fleet increases by 500% in 12 years. And again, as I was just saying, 85% of the vehicle fleet in 2010 are motorcycles. We call this motorization. And to give you some perspective in terms of the motorcycle helmet rate in Cambodia, and specifically in Phnom Penh, which is the capital of Cambodia, this is from January of 2011 to March of 2012. There's obviously some flexibility dependent on the time of day, but we're seeing approximately 80% of motorcycle drivers wearing motorcycle helmets, which is pretty good. Same cannot be said about passengers. In Phnom Penh, our passenger helmet wearing rate is approximately 8%. So we're seeing a difference of on a magnitude of 10 between motorcycle drivers and passengers. And then the children are not any better. We're at about 9% there. Cambodia does have a motorcycle helmet law, but children are not included in the motorcycle helmet law, nor are passengers. So the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative is a motorcycle helmet campaign that was started by the Asia Injury Prevention Foundation in Vietnam. So this NGO realized that they had a problem. Too many motorcyclists were dying on the roads in Vietnam, and and they were not wearing helmets. So they started this campaign, the campaign, which we'll get into the details of it very shortly, but before the campaign, helmet wearing rate was at 3%. After the campaign, over 90%, which resulted in 1 year, reduced fatalities of 14% and reduced serious injuries by 24%. But it's important to note that the results, these amazing results, are not a consequence of the campaign alone. There was a change in motorcycle helmet law and enforcement during this time. But the Asia Injury Prevention Foundation and the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative were instrumental in changing the motorcycle helmet law. And based on the successes of Vietnam, the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative is now expanding throughout the world. But specifically, our efforts are in Cambodia and Uganda. Partners of the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative include the World Bank, the Inter-American Development Bank, the CDC, and many others. CDC has joined forces with the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative from an evaluation perspective in Uganda and Cambodia. We are not responsible for the programmatic work, but we do give some feedback on our thoughts in terms of what we think might work and what might not work. Here are the five different components of the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative. We have technical assistance, public awareness education, which includes communication campaigns, targeted programs, helmet provisions. So a big problem is accessibility to helmets. So the Global Helmet Vaccine Initiative tries to build factories in countries as an NGO. Right now, they've only been successful in Vietnam, but there are plans both in Uganda and Cambodia to build these nonprofit factories. And then the fifth component is research, monitoring, and evaluation. Today, I'm going to show you the results of our work with the Helmet for Kids program. So the objective of Helmets for Kids is to increase helmet use and road safety knowledge of students and teachers at targeted schools. This is basically done by working with the schools to make the motorcycle helmet a part of the school uniform. And then how it works is it's a public-private partnership. When we get either other governments or other private organizations wanting to donate helmets. So we identify schools, which we'll talk about the criteria in a second. And this Helmet for Kids model was started in Vietnam. The Asia Injury Prevention Foundation basically wanted to pick up the program and slap it down in Cambodia. But we realized that there are, even though the two countries are very close, there are still cultural differences. So we had to speak pretty loudly to make sure that we were doing formative research and formative evaluation to make sure that those differences are identified. And then the data that I'm going to present today are from just four schools, because that's when we got involved. Each school was at a different phase in the implementation of the Helmet for Kids program. So I'm just going to be talking about four schools today. So in order to be selected as a target school, the schools must be along a high-density traffic area. And as you can see from some pictures from later on, these schools are essentially right along a very busy road. The areas around the schools cannot have any traffic signs or zebra crossings. Zebra crossings are basically crosswalks painted on the streets. At least 60% of the students must either leave or arrive on motorcycles and bicycles, and the schools must be committed to the pretty rigorous Helmet for Kids curriculum. So there are five components to Helmet for Kids. First is teacher training, where project staff train the teachers not only how to use the helmet themselves, but also they train the teachers the effective pedagogy for relaying the safety messages to the students. Another component is the educational murals, which explain how to safely use the helmet, how to safely cross the street. They depict the slogan, which is always care, always wear the helmet. And they remind parents to put a helmet on their children's heads when they drop them off and pick them up. The third component is student training, where all students participate in traffic safety lessons taught in classroom. And the students use the curriculum and training materials in order to keep the students engaged on changing traffic safety culture. Then there's a helmet handover ceremony, and this is going back to the public-private sponsorship that I was talking about earlier. This is when the community, the media, the school administration, and all the students get together and really kick off the event, and it shows the commitment of both the city, the school, and the community abroad. And then there are also extracurricular activities. So each school is responsible for designing their own extracurricular activities. Some examples from the past include games and contests of how to use a helmet correctly, how to safely cross the street, and how to ride a bicycle safely. And these are facilitated through trivia, painting contests, essay writing contests, and a simulation road. So of course, since we're mainly concerned with evaluation, and we're most concerned about if the students are actually wearing the helmets. So there have been 8 or 9 Helmet for Kids schools in Cambodia, but we're only evaluating 4 due to the phase at which the school is in the process. We do an evaluation, which is a helmet-based evaluation, helmet observation evaluation, 1 week before the campaign. Or when I say campaign, I mean the helmet handover ceremony. 1 week after the helmet handover ceremony, 10 weeks after, and then at the end of the school year. And the way that we collect the data are through, video record the observations, basically from the time the students are let out to when the students are done leaving, which is approximately 5 minutes. The observers record if the student is obviously wearing a helmet, the type of helmet the student is wearing, the type of vehicle, so it's either a bicycle or a motorcycle, the sex of the student, and if the motorcycle driver is wearing a helmet. So here's school one. And again, I'm gonna present these independently because each school is at a different point in the evaluation process. So here's school one. The red line includes the students arriving or leaving on motorcycles, and the blue line are bicycles. And this is just the pre and post, so immediately before and immediately after the helmet handover ceremony. And you can see that we have some pretty amazing results here. Literally 0% to 97% for bicyclists and 77% for motorcyclists in terms of helmet wearing rates. And I also want to point out that there were 256 bicyclists observed during the pre-observation and 310 observed during the post-observation. Here's school two. We're seeing 100% sustained helmet wearing rates among motorcyclists and almost the same rates among bicyclists at the 10 week after the helmet handover ceremony. School three, very, very similar. And then school four is a little interesting. So at school four, we have some interesting results for the motorcyclists. We think that this might be to the extremely small sample size, but it could also be a reflection of the different extracurricular activities that the schools are responsible for. So at some schools, we see the extracurricular activities they have extracurricular activities every day. Other schools, not really at all. So it might be something there. And this is what really matters. When you put everything together, we see sustained helmet wearing rates among both bicyclists and motorcyclists. We literally go from 0% before to close to 100% among bicyclists and close to 90% among motorcyclists. Here's a picture of a school before the campaign, after. Here's a different school before, after. And let's quickly talk about challenges. So first is the importance of monitoring and evaluation, relaying that message to the local staff. The local staff that we're working with are not experienced in monitoring and evaluation. We have to work very closely with them for them to realize the importance. We're constantly in feedback with them to make sure that they're collecting high-quality data, which is often pretty difficult when they're on the other side of the world. And then when we're testing different methods for collecting the data, we heard concerns from the research assistants that they couldn't accurately capture the data because all the students exit at once. It was a mass exit. So that's when we came to the solution of videotaping everything. And then there's also fidelity concerns. So in order to ensure high fidelity, we're in constant feedback with the staff. We've had to make multiple site visits. We're working with staff that basically didn't have, we try to always build capacity wherever we go, and these staff didn't necessarily have a foundation capacity to begin with. So it's been a very big learning experience for everybody. EV71, which is Introvirus 71, this was an epidemic that happened from April 2012 to July 2012, where 64 children in Cambodia under the age of 7 were killed. For the longest time, no one had any idea what was going on. The WHO sent people, the CDC sent EIS officers, CNN sent Sanjay Gupta. But they finally figured it out. But as a result of this epidemic, they canceled school. The Ministry of Health canceled school in the Ministry of Education for many parts of Cambodia. So we couldn't collect some of our end-of-term observations. And then lastly, is this sustainable? It's tough to say. We're going into schools. We're giving them helmets. And of course, when you give a whole population helmets, you are obviously going to see some pretty good results. But it's still going to be tough to figure out how to make this more sustainable. And then lastly, just moving forward, we're going to continue to all evaluation activities for this next year. We're going to continue other campaign activities. It's important to really disseminate this information because of this public-private partnership. And then we need to figure out if this model can be adapted to other countries. We think the answer is yes, but we're still not 100% sure. And then just to end it, it's important to note of the tremendous successes that we've had with Helmet for Kids in Cambodia, but we've only distributed helmets to a small portion of the population. And you can see from this photo that we still have a lot of work to do. We've learned through this that behavior change is pretty hard. I think it's we still have a lot of work to do, but we're not giving up yet. So thank you. Any questions? We have 2 minutes for questions.
I was just wondering, you were talking about sustainability, and I know for other vaccine programs, they have companies that in developing countries, they'll provide the vaccines at really reduced rates. I didn't know if you talked to Bell or other helmet companies about doing a similar model for your helmet vaccine.
Yeah, so again, we have to be careful here because this is CDC, and we're only doing evaluation work. That's what Dr. Friedman wants. But the Asia Injury Prevention Foundation has been working pretty hard with car companies and oil companies to try to make sure that they're the ones that are investing. But that's a good point that I'll definitely bring up with them. Thanks. Yeah.
So what do you guys do when kids grow up?
Yeah. So something that I didn't talk about is after the first year, staff will come back and do a helmet top-off. So that means that they will donate more helmets if the students, if their heads have changed, if they've lost their helmets, because obviously these are young students, so they're losing helmets. And what's really fun is we'll go unannounced, and we see that there are students who are walking to school in their helmets. So what we're seeing is the students are... they think it's cool. Like, this is a really good example of changing safety culture. And we try to give them both blue and red helmets, but it turns out that Cambodian children don't like blue. So we've really changed everything to red. Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you bring up a good point in terms of standards. So this tropical helmet definitely meets the Cambodian standard, but it doesn't meet the U.S. standards. And but, you know, it's affordable, and it's better than nothing, right? So until we can figure out how to make those helmets that meet the national standard, or the international standard, this is what we have to work with. But, you know, these helmets are ventilated, they're light, they're still a lot better than the alternative. Thank you.